Next case we'll hear is United States v. Ocean Pro Industries and Mr. Cicali. Is it Cy or C?
Cicali.
Okay, we'll hear from you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Daniel Cicali, representing appellants Ocean Pro and Ocean Pro Industries and Timothy John Lydon. With me at council table is Richard Page Wyrow, representing appellant Benjamin Clough. This appeal presents two issues of statutory interpretation, which in our view are well established in this circuit and warrant the relief requested. The first involves the district court's determination that venue for a false statement was appropriate in the District of Maryland, even though the statement was made in the District of Columbia after the conspiracy had ended and dealt with
well,
a
it's
matter.
Not part of the link to Maryland wasn't the conspiracy. The link to Maryland, it was not part of the conspiracy. It's alleged to be part of an investigation.
No, I understand, Your Honor.
And the investigation was in Maryland.
Yes, I understand.
Okay.
In fact, there's no confusion about the operative facts. The investigation began. There had been a number of pleas. On August 29th, 2007, agents of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and state officials from Virginia and Maryland executed a search warrant, served a grand jury subpoena on at Ocean Pro's offices in the District of Columbia. After being interviewed by a fish and wildlife agent, appellant Clough, who was at the time the fresh fish buyer for Ocean Pro, signed a statement asserting, among other things, that he had never purchased untagged striped bass from two named fishermen, Jerry Decatur and Jerry Decatur Jr. A Maryland grand jury returned a five-count indictment. The fifth count charged Ocean Pro and Clough with a violation of 18 U.S.C. 1001 based solely on the assertion.
It was a federal grand jury in Maryland.
Yes, Your Honor. Based solely on the assertion that he had not purchased untagged striped bass from these specific fishermen.
With respect to your venue argument, let me just tell you, I find this issue very difficult. It appears that Congress has defined an essential conduct element of the offense, the making of the false statement, in terms of its effects, i.e., its capacity to influence the decision-making of a government agency. Do you disagree, and if so, why?
I agree that the government must prove materiality.
And federal matter. And federal matter.
Federal jurisdiction.
No,
that
no,
is
no,
to
no,
a federal.
No. It says whoever in any federal matter, any matter of a federal agency. In other words, it can't be just any. It has to be affecting a particular investigation materially.
And the materiality, to restate my question, is defined in terms of the capacity to influence the decision-making of a government agency.
Yes,
there would
correct.
Be no other frame of reference.
That's correct.
So we're in agreement so far?
We are.
Okay.
Let me
in
start.
Yes,
go ahead.
No, you may not like where I go next.
So
if you want to rethink that, you might want to do
fine.
So now. Okay. Given that, isn't the only difference between the statutes we discussed in Bowen and which talked about the Hobbs Act, in which Congress defined the conduct elements in terms of their actual effects, is that here what we're talking about is you have to define materiality in terms of the effect, a potential effect, on the decision-making of a government agency and where that can be felt. Distinguish, given what we agree to, Distinguish Bowen.
All right.
Why shouldn't venue lie where the false statement could have an effect on the decision-making of the government body?
Congress clearly could have stated that. It didn't do it explicitly, as this court has held in...
The extent to which Congress is frequently not explicit is mind-boggling, which is why we have this problem. But help me with my analysis.
Right.
Analyze that for me the way you would like for me to analyze it.
In Bowens, the court rejected the argument, I think virtually identical to the one the government presses here. The government argued venue was proper in Virginia because the act of harboring, which in that case occurred in North Carolina, had an effect on the administration of justice.
But we agreed.
In Virginia.
We agreed. Remember, you agreed with me that the conduct element here, making a false statement, has a materiality component. It's defined in the materiality needs to be considered in the context of its capacity to influence decision making. So we've gone sort of beyond.
I don't think we have, Your Honor. Let me focus on the facts of this case, which I believe are clearly distinguishable from Bowen. In this case.
Oh, I agree with you.
From the government's reliance on Bowen. The facts in this case are that Mr. Clough was charged with a false statement that he never purchased untagged striped bass from two Virginia fishermen. The evidence at trial, the allegations in the indictment, do not suggest that Mr. Clough ever purchased fish except at the place where he made the statement, that is, the headquarters of...
question. You keep relating it to the conspiracy. And that isn't the violation. The congressional violation is a false statement as part of a material false statement as part of a federal investigation.
That has a tendency to influence the decision-making body to which it is addressed.
It says in any federal matter... whoever in any federal matter makes any materially false statement shall be fined. And materially false is one that would influence the people in that federal matter. And that federal matter is a Maryland investigation. What's wrong with that? I'd like to hear your argument, but that's taking it right from the statutory text.
I understand, but materiality, as the court explained, the Supreme Court has explained in several cases, there are essential conduct elements which must be considered for purposes of venue, and there are predicate circumstances, or as the Supreme Court...
Not predicate, this is effects. In other words, this statement isn't made to a Walmart salesperson. This is made to an investigator who is deciding whether to bring a criminal charge. And this guy's making a false statement in order to deter or deflect the product of the investigation. His conduct is affecting the investigation.
I understand, Your Honor, but his
and the investigation is a Maryland investigation.
But that doesn't.
His conduct occurs in a district.
But the criminal, what makes it criminal? To make it a violation, it has to be a false statement. Knowing and willful, it concealed a fact that was material to a matter, which has a natural tendency, which is defined, materiality is defined as having a natural tendency to influence the decision-making body to which it is addressed. How do you determine materiality without looking at its effect on the federal investigation in Maryland?
Right.
It really is very... You really have to answer that question in the way that you would want me to analyze it, because...
All right, let me try it again.
It has to be analyzed in that light.
The case the government relies on primarily for this very argument is United States versus Ringer, a Seventh Circuit decision. And in that case, the circuit held that in that case, the Southern District of Indiana's strong link to a statement that was actually made in Kentucky while the defendant was incarcerated makes it relevant to determining venue in the language of the court, where the events took place that were necessary to establish materiality. And the court went on to explain that venue is improper if the only acts that occurred in that district do not provide evidence of the elements of the charged case. Now, in this case, Mr. Clow said he never purchased untagged rockfish from two Virginia fishermen. Everything that is necessary to establish conduct and materiality occurred in the District of Columbia.
He made the statement in the District of Columbia.
That's correct.
But he fired the rifle toward Maryland. He pulled the trigger in District of Columbia, but the bullet hit a citizen in Maryland. Couldn't that crime be prosecuted both in the District of Columbia and in Maryland?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
If a guy stands in District of Columbia and fires a gun and kills somebody in Maryland, you say he couldn't be prosecuted in Maryland?
Well, Your Honor, the I'm blanking on the case now.
I want you to answer my question.
No,
a person firing a gun in D.C. and killed somebody in Maryland, standing in Maryland physically, you don't think that...
And then lies about it.
No, not lies about it.
I understand, Your Honor.
No.
Of course, but
no.
They're the effects of the...
It's not a lying about it. The case is he's being prosecuted for assault.
Exactly.
Interstate assault, say. Now, could that be prosecuted under the general venue statute in Maryland?
Yes.
And that's because the effect of shooting the gun killed the person in Maryland, right?
Because the offense is causing the death of another in the murder case or causing the injury in an assault case.
And here the thing is causing or tending to cause to mislead an agency who is investigating in Maryland.
I don't believe, Your Honor, that even Bowen's, which I recognize Bowen, you wrote.
You really have to hit the effect on the investigation, at least from my perspective.
All right.
And if you can't get any closer, I understand, but
let me try. In Ringer, where the...
You almost, at least from my perspective, going to another case
okay.
is probably not...
All right.
Best response. I think we've tried that.
All right. I'll yield any time that Mr. Wire may have on this. No? I believe, Your Honor, that because the rule of lenity requires this court not to extend the language of legislation beyond what Congress stated, that venue, which has always been based on essential conduct elements, should not be viewed as governed by the effects. Congress certainly knows how to express.
Oh, I thought Bowman said we do look to effects.
You can look at effects if Congress has defined the conduct.
Well, that's why.
Like in the Hobbs Act.
Exactly. Such as the Hobbs Act.
Stick to your guns.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I believe that the Hobbs Act, wire fraud, several cases, a number of them, Congress, and indeed the Lacey Act, where Congress establishes clearly where venue is. It's where...
Well, what about Section 1001? You haven't addressed 1001, and that's the act we're under.
Fine. 1001, this court has held that 1001... Congress did not indicate where venue would be specifically in 1001, and therefore the essential conduct elements have to be viewed. The false statement...
Well, doesn't 1001, didn't Congress say the statement has to be made in a federal matter?
Has to be made, yes, in a federal matter.
Okay. And if it's made in a federal matter, it also has to be material to that federal.
All right. I agree with that. I agreed with that earlier.
So basically, the conduct that's criminalized is the is the corruption of a federal matter. And the federal matter in this case happens to be located in Maryland.
Your Honor, the courts have consistently held that if the elements of the offense, I'm sorry, let me back up. If the defendant is interviewed by police officers concerning his knowledge of growing marijuana in Maryland, and he says in the District of Columbia, I never bought marijuana, which is what Mr. Clough said, I never purchased untagged rockfish from these individuals. I'm not certain how his denial, false though it may be, that he never purchased fish has any impact on the materiality of the investigation in Maryland, which is not the sale to Profish, but the illegal harvesting and transport of the fish from, in this case indeed, from Virginia fishermen, because both of the Decaturs were Virginia fishermen, who caught in Virginia waters and transported from Virginia to the District of Columbia for sale to Mr. Clough. And Mr. Clough denied, falsely, that he ever purchased those fish. I don't understand how that implicates the District of Maryland at all.
I don't understand how. I mean, Bowens says that venue will lie where the effects of the defendant's conduct are felt when Congress has defined the essential conduct elements in terms of its effects. Section 1001 criminalizes the knowing and willful making of a materially false statement in any federal matter, and defines materiality in terms of its effects. How do you determine the materiality, the effects, in any way other than in the context of the federal criminal investigation in Maryland? How else do you determine materiality? Maybe that's a straightforward question.
Right. A material fact has to be one that
makes the inference more or less likely.
All right.
In the context of what?
In the context of the matter before the federal agency. However, let's assume here, we can rely on the facts here. The only statement that Mr. Clough made had to do with his conduct.
That's a different question.
No, Your Honor, I understand you can define, and in fact you have defined me out of my position, but
I'm asking you to hit it. I'm telling you I'm not trying to trap you. I'm trying to tell you what my problem is so you can help me solve it. Right. And I'm sorry, I've also monopolized most of your time.
If I may, I'm happy to answer, but I would like to reserve some time on the...
Why don't you answer her question, and we'll give you your 4 minutes when you come back.
All right. The issue of both federal, whether a matter is within federal jurisdiction, the Supreme Court has held that is jurisdictional. That defines what 1001 covers. And the fact that it's material is designed to prevent the prosecution of facts that couldn't possibly affect an investigation. Let's assume that Mr. Wyro tells the FAA that he just flew over a national airport under his own power. That's a false statement. But no one would believe it. It's not material, even though it's within the jurisdiction of the FAA. Now, I recognize that is a bit of a stretch, but because the Constitution in two different sections requires trial of an individual in the district where the offense occurred, and Congress is not as explicit as it was in the Hobbs Act, as it was indeed in the Lacey Act, this court's expansion, as the Ringer Court expansion, is unwarranted.
You just disagree with Ringer, right?
Absolutely.
You say that's wrong.
I do, and I must say that in Ringer, even Ringer provides that there would be no venue in a case in which, let me see if I can find the language, in which the events, if the only acts that occurred in that district don't provide evidence of the elements of the charged offense. Now, this is a relatively straightforward case. To prove the violation, all the government had to have done is to establish that Mr. Clow lied when he said he never purchased fish, untagged rockfish, all of which occurred in the District of Columbia.
No, that isn't all they would have had to prove, and that's my problem.
He has to prove a lot more.
I walked through the elements. They would have had to prove more than the lie. The lie has to be, I mean, I went through them, but it has to be material to a federal matter. If all they had to prove was a lie, you'd be right. I wouldn't be asking my question.
All right. Why don't we take this up? You do have your rebuttal.
Thank
we're
you.
Going to give you your full rebuttal you requested, and
Thank
we'll hear
you.
From Mr. Wyrow. No, excuse me. We're going to hear from Mr. Smelt.
May I also
who is
excuse
second?
Me, Your Honor? May I also address the restitution issue in my rebuttal? Then I've never gotten to that second issue.
I tell you what, I don't want to extend this. Take 2 minutes to do your restitution, and so they can answer that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appellants were jointly and severally ordered to pay $300,000 restitution to the states of Maryland and Virginia, specifically to the Department of Natural Resources and the Natural Resources Commission. The court... There are a number of issues. Perhaps it's easier in this case to simply say what we agree with the government about. Restitution is statutory in origin. Maryland and Virginia both have significant interests in regulating and harvesting striped bass within their borders, and they have the power to do that. And the government may be the victim of a crime. And finally, unless the parties agree pursuant to a plea agreement, restitution may only be ordered by a federal court to the owner of lost or damaged property or to the victim of an offense, and a victim is defined as a person directly and proximately harmed as a result of the commission of the offense for which restitution is ordered. Where the parties disagree is whether or not Virginia and Maryland qualify as owners of migrating striped bass caught in their waters or as victims as defined under the restitution statute.
Well, there's more than one restitution statute.
I understand, Your Honor, but they all use the same language.
But it was also imposed as a condition of probation.
It still uses the same language, and indeed the probation statute requires the court to look back to the restitution statute.
Okay, well, we'll hear the rest on rebuttal, and both you and Mr. Wyrow have rebuttal. Mr. Smeltzer?
May it please the court. Good morning. John Smeltzer for the United States. I'm joined at counsel table by Wayne Hedenbach, who is trial counsel. Your Honor, starting with the venue question, we submit that this case is controlled by Bowens and the test in Bowens. And, of course, this court held in Bowens that the venue will lie in the district where the effects of an offense are felt, where Congress defines the effects, the essential conduct elements in relation to those effects. We submit, Judge Duncan.
What's the essential conduct?
The essential conduct is making the lie that's material to a matter.
Which all occurred in the District of Columbia.
The uttering of the false statement occurred in the District of Columbia. The materiality and the matter related to the commercial fishery in Maryland and the investigation.
You were investigating in the District of Columbia.
Yes, we were asking questions in the District of Columbia, therefore allowing responses. But what makes the state
the only essential conduct is making the false statement in the District of Columbia.
Well, it has to be material.
It has to be material. You get it right. It does have to be material.
You could have
just like perjury. If you got to prove perjury. If somebody lies in the courtroom, if we had a trial going on here, they lie, and if you want somebody, the government wants to prosecute them for it. They got to prove it's material. They could prove it's material by bringing in witnesses from all over the country. But the offense would have occurred right here in this courtroom. and it couldn't be prosecuted anywhere else, I don't think.
Well,
it'd be strange that it could be.
Right, as
be
I understand.
Passing strange, as one of these lawyers said here earlier today. It's beyond passing strange that you prosecute, try to prosecute this thing in Maryland, to me.
You're
pretty fundamental. I don't know why the government wanted to stretch these venue statutes all over the place. I think it's perfectly consistent with Bowen.
Well, Your Honor,
what I believe right here, that you don't have venue in this case.
In Bowen, Your Honor, there were two ways that the court recognized the venue could be shown. One is if all the essential conduct elements occur in the district, and then also the court specifically said that where Congress defines an offense in relation the essential conduct elements of an offense in relation to effects, that venue will lie where those effects occur. And the court gave the specific example of the Hobbs Act cases and also obstruction of justice, which we submit is very much like 1001.
Hobbs Act used the term affecting commerce.
Well, obstruction of justice statute doesn't use the term effects at all. And that was another example that this court gave, and that's the one we cite in our brief as the analogy. Criminal conduct is projected toward a proceeding in the case of obstruction of justice in another district, can be prosecuted in the district where the criminality is projected toward, just like the firing of the gun and the bullet in the example that Judge Niemeyer gave. Here, what we have is a false statement that's projected toward the investigation of the unlawful harvest of rockfish from a commercial fishery in Maryland.
And the flip side of that is, if it is not so projected, it's not a violation of federal law.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The statement has to be material to a federal investigation.
It has to be proven as material, just like proving a perjury case.
To a federal investigation.
All it is perjury. All it is a perjury charge. And here it's 1001, they made it a perjury to lie to the federal officer. I've never heard of trying to prosecute a perjury other than where the witness was sitting.
Well, Your Honor, we would submit that...
Can you do that? Can the government prosecute a perjury case other than where the perjury occurred? They have to prove it's material.
Your Honor, I'd have to look at any particular perjury statute and see how the conduct elements are defined. If it relates to a materiality somewhere else, perhaps. That issue was not briefed. But here we submit that this case, Section 1001, cannot be distinguished from the examples that the court gave in Bowens as a case where venue was proper. And, of course, most of the conduct that was relevant to proving materiality was conduct in where the commercial fisheries are. That's how we prove the materiality, the illegal conduct. This was a statement with respect to that. That occurred in the District of Maryland. In false statement cases, the place where the false statement is uttered is often a matter of happenstance. I mean, Ringer was a good example of that, where a statement is made in a district that had no connection to the content and the substance of the statement, and the statement was clearly projected toward influencing things in a different district. If this court were to narrowly construe Section 1001 to have venue only where statements are uttered, you will have outlier false statement cases.
What's the question of whether it's the essential conduct elements of the offense is the statement. Then they got these circumstance elements. Bowen talked about those, right?
Right. That's language from the Supreme Court opinion in Cambrales.
Circumstance elements don't provide a basis.
Right, but the essential conduct elements, the materiality...
Essential conduct element is lying to the officer.
In making a material false statement.
Well, that's the lie. It's not a lie unless it's material.
Right. And
it's not a lie unless it's material.
Your Honor, I understand the difference on the panel, but we would submit that the materiality point is...
It can be material to anything.
I'm sorry?
It can be a lie. I mean, you can tell a lie. You can lie to a federal...
It's not a lie under 1001 unless it's material.
No, it has to
be material.
And we would submit the framework for determining the materiality is, as Judge Duncan's questions posed, you can only prove the materiality in relation to a matter.
You have to do a lot of things to prove the case sometimes. You have to prove it's material, certainly. That's a circumstance of making it being a false statement under 1001.
Right. Well, but the materiality is an essential, not a circumstance element.
Well, the essential thing is making the statement.
Central is making the statement. False statement.
Well, Your Honor, when the Supreme Court and this court talk to the distinction between essential conduct elements
and circumstances. I'm not going to convince you, and I don't expect
right.
You shouldn't give up your position.
And circumstances.
You shouldn't give up your position. I don't understand why the government wants to stretch these venue statutes out. I just don't.
Well,
I mean,
Your
I'm
Honor.
Usually, I'm usually kind of. Right. I've been inclined, I've been accused of being a government judge sometimes, but I don't understand these venue issues.
Well, let me just
right.
In response to that specific question, let me just say this is a case that involved a commercial fishery in Maryland. All of the other
the investigation has taken place multiple jurisdictions.
But the conspiracy
has to be prosecuted here in Maryland.
Maryland was the logical place to bring the suite of charges in this case.
But you can only
we
bring
submitted
the offenses that occurred there. If there are other offenses that occurred somewhere else. You have to bring them somewhere else.
If you're right, Judge.
Unless there's some, maybe you're arguing for a doctrine, and maybe that's what we ought to look at. Is there a doctrine of pendant venue?
Right. No, we're not.
Because you got venue one place, do you get venue for everything that occurred during the investigation there as well?
And I'm not arguing for that, Judge King. What?
Well, you are, but it's not pendant venue. It seems to me if the crime is affecting, by Congress, affecting an investigation, you're undermining an investigation, you can be prosecuted anywhere where the investigation is affected. A conspiracy may be prosecuted in seven states because there are people all
right.
There's nothing foreign to venue statutes to have multiple venues.
No, the difference between on that conspiracy is that the conspiracy occurred in all those seven states because the conspiracy was a continuing crime that went on and carried over all those states. Wherever an act occurred, the crime occurred.
Right.
Here the act is made in one venue.
Judge King, I understand your point, and I was merely responding to the question about why the government wanted to do this, and that it was a matter
it was
of
convenience. I agree with all that. That's why you wanted to do it, because it was convenient.
Well, and because the case law supported it. Ringer.
And if there's a doctrine of pendant venue, you can do it.
Ringer supported the prosecution, and Bowens, we believe, did, which is why we brought the case here. Of course, it's up to the court to make a determination, but we weren't trying to stretch the venue
Ringer's
statute.
Not controlling here.
That's correct, Your
Honor. I think Bowen's distinguished.
Anything else?
Not on the venue point, unless the court has any questions on the venue point. Let me quickly turn to restitution. Your Honor, the defendants make a single argument on restitution, which is the argument that Maryland and Virginia are not entitled to restitution for the value of the rockfish that was unlawfully harvested from their state waters simply because it was not property per se. And that, we submit, is wrong for at least three reasons. The first threshold reason is because under the restitution statutes, the Victim Witness Protection Act, the Probation Act, the Supervised Release Statute, none of those statutes specifically requires the government to show an offense against property in order to seek a restitution award. They only require the government to show a pecuniary harm and an impact to a victim. And we submit that we clearly have done that here and that the defendants have focused on the wrong statutory provision, the provision on the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act, which narrows the class of cases to which restitution has to be applied. And there it narrows it to Title 18 offenses against property. But that phrase doesn't occur in the other restitution statutes. Nonetheless, we also strongly submit that the fish in the waters, in the state waters of Maryland and Virginia, are state property. They are state property under longstanding common law traditions. They are state property under federal statute that we cite in our brief. The Submerged Lands Act, which is 43 U.S.C. Section 1311, specifically recognizes state title to the natural resources in the lands under navigable waters and the natural resources in the waters. So it's clear under federal law that states have a property interest in their waters. And then the third point is state and or the Maryland and Virginia laws also provide for the forfeiture of any unlawfully caught fish. So even if the court were somehow to find that the fish, while it's running in the water, is in state property, there is a forfeiture provision which automatically gives the states a property interest at the moment fish is unlawfully caught. That was the Second Circuit's determination in United States versus Bengus. That was a Mandatory Victim Restitution Act case. That was a case where the Second Circuit found this is an offense against property because there's a property interest, the interest in the forfeiture of the commercial the fish from the commercial fishery that were unlawfully harvested, that is an interest of the state. And unless the court has any questions on
Thank
any of that.
Smeltzer.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Feichley. Do you want to reverse your order?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Wyrow.
Wyrow.
Good
morning. Let me try and address the issue about in a matter within the jurisdiction of the executive and the effects staff. Rockfish and the regulation of rockfish is within the jurisdiction of U.S. Fish and Wildlife already. And what Mr. Clow said was, I didn't buy untagged fish from the Decaturs. They didn't ask him about the investigation. It is illegal to buy untagged rockfish. That is a matter that is within the jurisdiction of U.S. Fish and Wildlife. In the Ringer case,
did he make it in connection in the course of an investigation being conducted by the government?
He did. But
was it material to that investigation?
It was material to his violation in an indirect fashion, yes, but it was more material to whether or not he had had violated the Lacey Act.
He's not prosecuted for that. He's prosecuted for making a false statement that has the effect of corrupting an investigation.
But then if you take that to its logical conclusion, which is, let's say Larry and Moe are growing pot in southern Maryland and in the Northern Neck, and they take pot into the district and sell it to somebody, a federal investigator comes along and that person's charged with possession, and then that person, an investigator comes along and says, did you buy pot from Larry and Moe? Then that person who the underlying crime is the lie which occurred in the district and the purchase of pot which has occurred in the district could be charged.
It's an unfair analogy because you don't have an ongoing investigation of conduct. There was a Maryland grand jury convened in this case to prosecute this investigation, which was in a Maryland fishery. They could have done it in Virginia, too.
True, but if
in connection with the investigation that Congress defined this violation.
But if the investigators went to the person who bought the pot in the District of Columbia as part of their investigation against the guys who were growing it in Virginia and Maryland.
I don't agree with that analogy because there was no pre-existing investigation. They just asked him when they found the pot.
Well, all right. Well, then change my analogy and say that there is an investigation going on at the time they ask him the question. Then for pure possession charges, you're going to cross jurisdictions under the analogy you just made.
I suggest to you that's not analogous.
Okay. Well, then I will go to the Ringer case, and more to your point, I think.
In
the Ringer case, they specifically said that the false statement has to be intended to have an effect in another jurisdiction. The false statement in the Ringer case was, I know that my buddies of mine across the border are selling drugs. And then he recanted that statement. So the investigation that they were conducting across the street or across the state lines was impeded. They didn't ask Mr. Clow whether or not he knew that there was an investigation going on. And in fact,
of course, the statute doesn't require that.
No, but in Ringer interpreting it, they specifically said it has to be intended to have an impact. All he said was, I didn't buy any fish.
You know, it doesn't help when we have a statute that defines the conduct, and the question is whether the congressionally defined conduct, the effects of the professionally defined conduct, go across and in Maryland. But you have to start with the congressionally defined conduct in this case, which was material to a federal investigation. Your colleague conceded that this is a Maryland investigation. I guess it's a Virginia investigation, too, but it was in Maryland. And that this was made in connection with the Maryland investigation, and the government alleged that it was material to the investigation so that it corrupted it. And they proved that at trial. Now, the question is, that congressionally defined conduct, which is a false statement, not just a material false statement, but a false state material to an investigation in Maryland.
Here's
they don't allege anything in the indictment about being material to an investigation in Maryland.
They did not.
But haven't we, haven't we held that the government has to prove those three elements to establish a violation?
I think that Mr. Clough could have been convicted under 101 for merely saying, I didn't buy untagged rockfish from them, regardless of whether or not their investigation, because the purchase of untagged rockfish constitutes a violation of the Lacey Act.
But Ringer not a violation of... I'm looking at our precedent. We've said that in order to prove a violation of 1001... you have to prove three things.
Mm-hmm.
False statement.
Correct.
Knowing and willful. Materiality.
To any matter. And the purchase of untagged rockfish is a matter within the jurisdiction of U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Okay, I understand. Okay.
That's
what the indictment said.
And that's what the indictment said, and Ringer is different. Ringer is more akin to an obstruction of justice charge because Ringer's statements were directly connected to an investigation and pertained explicitly by his own words to an investigation being conducted in another state. All Ben Clough said was, I didn't buy rockfish from these two guys in the District of Columbia. Had he admitted it, he wouldn't have been guilty of lying, but he would have admitted that he had violated the Lacey Act.
Okay, yeah, I see your time's up. We've got
thank you.
Cycly.
I'd like to spend my time talking about the restitution issue. We recognize that Congress, in both the Victim Witness Protection Act and the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act, provides for cases in which there may be no identifiable victim and provided limited provisions to deal with that. The Mandatory Victim Restitution Act provides the court shall order restitution for an offense in which there is an identifiable victim or victims who have suffered physical injury or pecuniary loss.
What about the Second Circuit's analysis that illegally caught fish aren't subject to the forfeiture of the state and therefore...
All right, I'm happy to...
It's proprietary interest.
Happy to address that. The domestic South African law in which the Bengus case turned was not fully explicated in the opinion. On appeal, the government argued that a South African regulatory scheme in combination with South Africa's assertion of rights under the UN Convention on the Law of the Seas created a property interest.
Because of the forfeiture right?
No. By creating a belt of the sea extending 200 miles from the coast of South Africa, this is referred to under the UN treaty as, or the UN convention, as the exclusive economic zone, or EEZ. And under this law, the government argued, the lobster resource is owned by the government because the government now owns the 200-mile space. Now, under this analysis, Bengus resembles much more closely Fourth Circuit case, United States versus Newsom, where in that case, cherry trees were cut down in the Monongahela National Forest, and defendants were ordered to pay restitution. But they were convicted not only of conspiracy, but of theft of government property. There's no question that the government owns the trees.
I'm talking about the Second Circuit opinion.
Yes, I understand. I want to draw the analogy to show that.
But if the Second Circuit said that the fish within that 200-mile economic zone, of course, United States has that same zone, are owned by the government, then that ends the case.
Well,
but I'm not sure that that's correct. I think the analysis there was the fact that the fish, after being illegally caught, could be forfeited.
Yeah, I understand, Your Honor. I raised this. In the United States, it's commonplace for criminal defendants to be required to forfeit the proceeds or instrumentalities of a crime, but there is absolutely no support that I'm aware of in U.S. jurisprudence for the proposition that the government had a proprietary interest in an object that could be proceeds or instrumentalities of a crime prior to that object being forfeited. And yet, the Second Circuit holds that under South Africa law, the South African government owned the property at the time it was illegally caught. I just believe that that is a significant difference from U.S. jurisprudence with respect to forfeiture.
Under VWPA, mm-hmm. can't the district court order restitution to anyone harmed by the criminal conduct?
Under the it may, but it has to be to a victim.
But that's a person directly harmed. Right. And it's your argument that Maryland and Virginia weren't directly harmed?
I believe that it's that reading the statute in its entirety, it is clear that Congress intended the right of the victim to be akin to the right of a property holder. There are a series of Supreme Court cases which have rejected the 19th and 18th century notions that the government owns wild animals and fish.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Blakely.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll come down and greet counsel and proceed on to the next case.